wonderful world of wine. Stay close to me.
Georgie Samios joins us as he does every Thursday just to talk a bit of wine. He might be up in Sydney at the moment. I'm not sure that's the best place to be. Georgie boy, welcome.
Good morning, Gary. Yeah, no, I'm in Sydney, and to make it worse, I'm in the eastern suburbs, so I'm getting out quicker than planned.
What's the vibe like?
It was interesting last night. There was pockets in the eastern suburbs where you couldn't see anyone, and then you'd walk down the road and there was a restaurant with 4,000 people in it. So all a bit different, but look, everyone's pretty worried about it. Obviously, the bloke spent a bit of time in a few barbecue shops, so let's just hope he didn't infect anyone.
What are you selling barbecues now?
No. That's where the guy that got tested positive. No, I don't. I like barbecues galore, but I don't go to four shops in a day. No.
Hey, George, before we talk about cask wine, and we know we're celebrating 50 years of cask wine this year, what is Piquette? Piquette, the French wine. What's that?
That's the French version of what most European countries still make, which is basically wine which has been made off the leftovers from the first wine. So as you know, Tim, when you crush your grapes and you ferment them and you press it off the skins, you've then got skins and seeds and stalks from the grapes that are left over.
Yep.
And generally they've been used to make spirits, so neutral spirit. But the Europeans for centuries, back to the ancient Romans and the Greeks, would then add water to that, then potentially add a little bit more sugar or honey, and then ferment it again, and they'd get a really light wine that was about 4 or 5% alcohol with some bubbles in it. And it's what they would drink during the day. And often they would give it to the workers in the fields. And in fact, 2 years ago when I was back in Greece visiting the family, it was during harvest time. And my uncle still makes this wine, and he uses it as his sort of lunchtime refreshing glass of wine. It goes back to work.
George, I'm hearing this is making a big comeback, particularly over in the States at the moment.
Absolutely. It's becoming trendy. Now, it's not as easy to make as it sounds because it's a little bit volatile and the wine can go off pretty quickly. But if you can nail it and bottle it with the right closure, it's becoming a bit of a movement because it is lighter in structure, lighter in alcohol, and it's very natural. It's just sort of the leftovers, and it's a good way to use what is basically either turned into spirit or fed to the cattle. So, it's making a move, and I reckon you should look at it for next year, Tim.
Oh, no, he's a fiano, man. Hey, Georgie, I think you've had a huge impact on a lot of people out there that love listening to you, love the way you talk about wine. Cask wine's always had this
stigma.
Stigma is the word I was after. It gets a bad rap, and I thought you would be along those lines as well. So I've asked you to do some homework, but you think there's some good cask wine around?
There is, and we have cask to thank for a few things. And if you look at the first cask, was actually made by a guy called Tom Angoves in 1965, and he was inspired by the old bladders that, again, the farmers would use to store their water or their liquid in. And he couldn't quite get it right, and then Angoves, the family, sort of got a little bit better right. But in the end, in 1971, a guy called David Wynne, who obviously owned the Wynne's Winery in Coonawarra, he perfected what we still use today as bag-in-box or the cask. And what it did in the 70s is more than tripled our consumption. Because what happened, Gary, is you'd get home from work and you'd say, oh, you feel like a half a glass of wine. You'd get half a glass of the Claret or the Moselle. You might have another half a glass
of dinner,
maybe another half after dinner. Then you'd kick back in your Jason recliner and watch the Sullivans and you'd have another half a glass. And before you knew it, you'd drunk half a bottle each.
That's so right. You had a full bladder.
You had a full bladder. And so with cask lasting between 3 and 6 weeks open, it was actually a really good way for us to learn about wine. And at one point, it was 60% of the wine that Australia drank, as in the volume. But now it's probably about 25%. But still some good casks out there. I don't turn my nose up them. They play a role. They're convenient. You can take them on boats. You can take them to the beach because there's no glass. And, there's one brand that I sort of steer always people to, and it's called Winesmiths. So it's Wine Smiths, one word, and they've got about 10 or a dozen different varieties. And the thing to understand with cask is it's not to be put in your cellar. You're drinking it straight away. It's going to be fruitier. It's going to be slightly sweeter. So maybe it suits people that are learning about wine. Go get a cask and maybe cut your teeth on that. Cask has still got value.
George, A lot of questions coming through while we're talking to you, so I'll just fire some of these at you as well. Somebody out there wants to know the best Fiano under $20. That's from Craig out there. Can you recommend a Fiano for around or under $20?
I think Coriolis is around 20 to 22. McLaren Vale, go towards McLaren Vale, and there's quite a few producers there now producing it. The challenge is obviously trying to find them, in particular here in Victoria. But yeah, I reckon steer towards Coriolis or McLaren Vale.
Coolabah, yep. Fruity Lexia versus Golden OK Fruity White, please. Do you know what that means?
Yeah, they're both larger format casks, so 4 litres. Look, the Fruity Lexia, true to its name, it's pretty sweet and pretty fruity. You've got to have a palate to have that. I think 4 litre casks play a role, but generally the smaller ones, in particular those winesmiths, are a little bit more premium, so I'd steer towards them.
I know you're a gout specialist, George. This particular person, Sean in Hyatt, he loves this segment. He suffers from gout, but he loves his red wine and steak. Is there any particular variety of red wine that doesn't get the gout flaring up?
Gout's an interesting one. I think I've said it before, the consumption of water is critical for all of us when we're consuming alcohol, but in particular with gout. And I would probably stay away from Cabernet because of the higher tannin levels and the higher histamine levels, because, again, that doesn't help if you suffer from gout. So I'd stick towards the Merlots, the Grenaches, potentially a Pinot, even that one we talked about a couple of weeks ago. So maybe just a little bit lighter, but definitely stay away from Cabernet.
Hi, George. Now, this is back on the cask. You've got a lot of people interested in cask wine. Is there a premium cask wine? Like, if you might have a few extra sheets, you might be able to fork out. What's the top of the range? What's the grange of cask wine?
Well, you'll find occasionally a 1 litre or a 2 litre cask. But I think the most premium of the everyday casks are those winesmiths. They are 2 litres. They're sort of in the mid-teens. And so per litre, they're actually a lot more expensive than the 4 litre casks, but the wine is much better.
Right. Hey, boys, can you please ask Georgie when I should open a 2013 South Australian Shiraz and a 2012 South Australian Cab Sav? They're under Wolfie's label to commemorate Dustin Fletcher's 400th game. When should they be open, George?
Fletcher's not going to play his 500th game, but I wouldn't be something to them. I'd be drinking the 13 probably in the next year or so, whereas the 12 being probably a little bit more of a solid year, probably give it a couple more years. But I think after about 10 years, you're probably about right.
Reece is in the area. He wants to go to a winery in Coonawarra. He's only there for a day. What do you suggest?
Wins by far. It's the pioneer of the area. Some amazing back vintages. Beautiful interactive space where you learn about Coonawarra and the soil and the ancient volcanic soils and everything there. Probably go Wins is the best one.
We talked about the Piquette, which is low alcohol, I think around maybe 4% alcohol. But somebody here wants to know, any zero alcohol wine that actually tastes like wine? Are there some good zero alcohol wines out there?
What's the point?
They're coming, Tim. It's the movement. If you look at zero beer, zero spirits, things that Seedlip did. Probably the one at the moment that seems to have got some traction and is available in most supermarkets is McGuigan Zero, but there are quite a few coming out later this year, and I'll probably do a tasting of a few of them when they come out. Whites has never been a problem. It's getting flavour in reds with no alcohol. It's like having a piece of steak with no fat through it. You need the fat to give it some flavour. So it's taken a while, but I reckon the industry's pretty close.
How's your knee going, by the way, before we let you go?
No, it's going well. Going well.
Any swelling?
Up and about. Beg your pardon?
Any swelling in the knee?
There's still a little bit, mate. Yeah, we've got that. It's called old age as well.
You're managing it okay? The pain? Everything all right?
Yeah, I am. Thank you for being concerned. That's really nice of you.
Have you got your recommendation for today?
I have. I've gone to Clare Valley, and we're going to a winery that makes lots of good wines called Taylor's, but there's one in particular, which is the Jarraman, J-A-R-A-M-A-N Shiraz. So Taylor's, yes. Jarraman Shiraz, Clare Valley.
I'm a fan.
It's great wine. Great wine.
Georgie, magnificent. I hope you get out of Sydney okay, and we'll talk to you next week.
Thank you.
Private jet, Gary. You won't struggle getting out of Sydney.
Georgie Samuels from Treasury Wines Estate.